Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Small doses,
self-help from the hip.
Small doses,
we're talking that shit.
Small doses,
and keeping it real.
Small doses,
with me and them seals.
It's so funky.
This week, we are joined by Nicole Chapateau, who is the fashion editor at Vanity Fair, and she is a sister. And I really wanted to get her on the show because, you know, I just dropped Illustrious League. And as I am, you know, kind of just taking my little very baby steps into the fashion space, you know, I'm always curious about what's already there. And when we talk about Black and fashion, we're talking about so many levels of things, right? We're talking about not just designers, but we're talking about, you know, these stigmas around, you know, what Black fashion is. We're talking about the positions that exist that aren't in the front facing, you know, positions. We're talking about the history of fashion and style within Black culture, etc. So there's so many spaces to discuss. And I know a lot of us also think about these lines, these luxury lines in the past few years that have really, you know, shown their ass by putting out work that has some blatant and not so blatant racial undertones. And so I think it's really great that we are able to get somebody on that can talk about this. And for what it's worth, I know there's a lot of y'all who may be saying like, well, fashion is like so extra, it doesn't matter to me. But then there's those of us who really just love a look, you know? And even if you may not like care about it for yourself, you know, you may care about seeing that looks on other people. I mean, who doesn't love seeing a look on Rihanna, right? She gives you a look. So very happy to be joined by Nicole, who can help us get some insight into what's going on within the fashion world as a Black editor, as a Black woman, and what it is for Black designers to be carving out a space within that space. We here at Small Doses would like to make a warm welcome to Ms. Nicole Chapateau. I feel the need to say her last name with that much gusto, Chapateau. And, you know, okay, so your Instagram says like your current title, which is, you know, fashion editor at Vanity Fair. But so that's why, like, to me, today's conversation about Black in fashion, you know, you're the right person to talk to because you are Black. In fashion. Yes.
And all of the above.
All of the above. But I would love to hear, like, how you got to this point. Like, what even got you on this road?
Oh, my gosh. That is, like, okay, I'll make it, like, really quick. I actually started out working in architecture. You know, I have a Caribbean parent. My dad is Haitian.
Okay.
You don't do fashion. Doctors, lawyers, you be a scientist. So architect felt, and I do love architecture. It's something like I will always love. Felt like, okay, I could still be creative and like make him happy. So I studied that in school, worked for an architect for 2 years outside of college. After a year, I did happen to watch 9/11. So we were downtown. I watched it and was like, yo, if you can die at work, I do not want to die doing this.
Wow.
Like, just, I never said, like, that's wow. How I felt about it. Like, I don't like these people. I don't want to work until 4 a.m. all the time. I want to have, like, do something I love and be passionate about. So I was like, made a plan, quit my job, and then started interning in fashion. And I also had to, because I was older, I had to like work too. And
that was my next question. Like, I mean, you were probably late 20s at this point, right?
I was in my late 20s. I think I started interning when I was 25.
I'm mad that we feel like that's like old. We're like, I didn't intern until I was 25. But then, and so like, what types of internships did you pursue?
I started taking class at FIT because I really could not figure out how to get an internship without like the college route. Like it just didn't seem like available. So a friend and I were like, all right, let's just take these classes at FIT. And it was like fashion. I can't remember what the degree was because I actually have an extra degree. I don't even know what it is, but we're like, let's do this because maybe I want to be a buyer.
That's probably the most West Indian thing you said. Like, I just have an extra degree and I don't even know. That's a very, yeah. Like, I don't even know what it does, but I got it.
So we're like, maybe I want to be a buyer. Maybe I want to be an editor. And an internship popped up at Marie Claire magazine. And it was to be like the accessories director's intern. I stalked those people every day. It was like, hey, still open. Because I needed an internship. I was like, otherwise I'm wasting time.
Got and in the door. What happens in the internship? Like, because it's not a paid internship. So
it is 100% unpaid. It was for credit. And that was the only way I could get the internship because they were only doing internships for credit. Okay. So I had to be in class. So that worked out. That was fine. So I was still like working with my friend Mandy. She had like her own little like marketing and PR. It was really small at the time. So she did like Jabot Jeans was one of her brands. So she was like, hey, come and help me with this. We would send like Jabot Jeans to basketball players. Like that's what our, like Maya. Like I remember specifically, send Maya these jeans. Like she'll be so cute.
That's so specific.
It was early 2000. So like, we're like, who is popping off? Let's send some to like.
Send some to Cash Money, to Lil Wayne and Juvie and Baby and the Boys. Yeah.
Hope okay. that they wear it and while I was in school and that is what I and, but and during my internship I legitimately would unpackage jewelry that came from whatever brand and photocopy it and put it in a binder and lay it out on a tray and then when it was time to send it back I would go get that binder that was like photocopy jewelry and cross it off and that was it. Or I'd like organize like pictures. You take the editors would take pictures at market appointments and there was no digital cameras or iPhones back then. So they used disposable cameras like film. We get two copies made and we'd be like, all right, here's our copy. And we'd label them like Fendi pictures 1 through 50 and then send Fendi the pictures 1 through 50 and be like Marie Claire's Fendi spring. Like it was just like, I think about like my job now. I'm like, dang, we were so antiquated. I would fax out a request every once in a while, like with a fax machine.
With a fax machine. The only time I use a fax machine is to say fax, like F-A-C-T-S in text. Like that's when I use the fax machine. It's literally the emoji. Fax.
And that was it. And I just like, you know, I had to work also, so I couldn't be there like the other interns. But when I was there, I was like, I'm present. I'm doing my job. I'm not like playing games. I don't need to eat lunch. I need to be in your faces so you can hire me. And I got lucky that someone quit, her assistant quit or like moved on and they offered me a job. But then I also was offered a job at Neiman Marcus in their buying program in Dallas. So I had to make a choice.
And so you're in New York.
I'm in New York. So I was like, I don't want to move to Dallas, but like it was also a great job. And I was like, if you want to be a buyer, like you want to go through the Neiman Marcus buying program. Like that's where usually people hire other buyers from is that they know they went through that buying program. So I was like, oh, more school and Dallas? No, thanks.
More school in Dallas.
No,
so you stayed in New York. And now when you were at Marie Claire, like, what do you feel like the demographic was? Like, were there a lot of other Black people?
I'm going to say there was none. Oh, no, wait. One, at one point, the fashion director had an assistant and her name was Linda and she was from London and she was Black. And it was the two of us.
Linda from London was Black.
Yes. And that was, and then Danya, who ran the fashion closet, was Mexican, from Mexico. We were so diverse.
Right. Exoticals.
Everyone else, like higher up, was white women. Just that's it. No one else.
Because when I was doing, I guess, okay, this is 20, I have no concept of time anymore. Okay, this is 2021. So 2018, I had gotten a new publicist and I was basically like doing the, you know, being chartered around town, like Cotillion. And I was doing, you know, the stops. And I remember going in the Condé Nast building, and I think I can't remember what two places I went to in Condé Nast, but I do feel like Marie Claire was one of them.
Oh,
I
Mary know Claire's
Hearst. Mary okay, Claire. So then
it was maybe you were in the Hearst building.
I was like, I was in the Hearst building, I think, because
you probably did Marie Claire, Harper's Bazaar.
I was just about to say, I did Bazaar. Yes, yes, yes. I did L, Harper's Bazaar, and yep, I did all three of those. And I was just like, oh wow. It's really just still white women. Like it was, and that was just 3 years ago. And I was really just like, wow. Like it really was kind of surprising to me. And there was, and then there's like Chrissy at Harper's.
Yes. There's always like one, there's always like one of us somewhere. But I also feel like a lot of like the Black people who work in fashion tend to be freelance. Which I just now I'm thinking about. Why are a lot of us freelance? I don't know. I don't know the answer. Could be many things, but a lot of freelance.
I was going to say, because Shiona is our costume designer at Insecure. And I originally met Shiona way back in like 2009 when I had like a web series on AOL Black Voices. And I had a show called The Spark, and we did like a fashion episode, and we had Shiona and Memzor, and they came on, and I still have like a brooch that Shiona, I'm talking like this because it's how Shiona talks, and it was a brooch.
That's true.
I've been really working on my Shiona impersonation, and this is where I'm at with it right now, and I feel like it's getting better. Thank you. I'm not exaggerating, y'all. That's exactly right. She's from Bermuda. So yes, like, and Shiona will gather you to, she will gather you together and rip you to pieces. And it's
in a quiet tone.
Just like this and through her teeth. Just no, I don't like anybody here. I don't like any of you. And I wish everybody would just evaporate.
You guys are all ruining my life.
We love you, Shiona. Also, by the way, we have to shout out our mutual Joy Garner, who is a lawyer / hilarious person. And I always tell the story that when I met Joy, we were in Dominican Republic. And I always tell the story that when I asked her, what would you be doing if you weren't a lawyer? She said, chilling. And it had never occurred to me that that could be a life path. And she was very much like, no, that's what we're working towards.
I'm chilling. Pretty sure when she's like done in her lawyership, she will be chilling.
I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean chilling? She was like literally doing nothing. What we're doing right now, this would be my life. And we were doing nothing. So I was like, yo, that's inspiring. First of all, let me just tell you, thank you for answering my DM.
I was blown away. I was like, is this a real DM or is it one of those fake accounts? And I'm missing, like, secretly there's a capital M in the middle. Like, you know, like the people who make the fake accounts is like
it's secret, like a gratuitous M. Underscore. And you're like,
Yeah, you're like, I missed that one. Dang, now all my bank accounts been drained.
Well, I have been really wanting to connect with folks that particularly are, you know, unique voices in their space. But also, like, I would not get a chance to meet you if it wasn't for COVID. Like, because you're in New York and you would be working in an office and you would be so busy. And I'm sure you're still so busy, but I don't know that you're in an office.
I'm in my home.
There's a TV.
My plan.
And, you know, I feel like I'm just really wanting to get to like expand, you know, just my folks, even though this is the time where people are like, kind of like our borders got closed. I'm like, no, let's expand. Let's meet people that like, you're not going to run into.
I've definitely connected to more people that I would have ever been able to connect with because of COVID. So
it's so true. Like, I feel like we have made a concerted effort.
There's some positivity that has come out of such a dark thing.
And for the record, I'm officially over it. I'm
not messing with it.
I hadn't really reached this point until recently where I was like, you know what? I think I'm over this. Yeah. because
the other day I would risk it all. I was like, I'm gonna risk it all. I'm gonna risk it all and get a facial. Risk it. Because you gotta take your makeup off. But I said it out loud and I actually texted a friend and was like, yo, should we risk it all and get a facial? She was like, yeah. And we were like, when? She's like, June. Stop risking it.
Yeah, I mean, I went to dinner the other night and felt like I was risking it all. Like, and it wasn't even that. I mean, we were sat like on the side. It was like me and my homeboy. And he had made a point of like, you know, getting an early enough reservation where it isn't like too crazy. And then they had like dividers between the, I mean, it was so safe. And I still was just like, I don't know if this is smart. I don't know if we should.
I've gone outside to eat, like with actually Joy. And she will tell the waitress to be like, don't come over here and pour water. Don't pour our wine. Don't approach. We ordered what we ordered and we like it. You don't need to ask us. Like, stop. Do not approach. It's so great. I only want to eat with her because she's so great about, she'll handle it. Then you don't have to worry about like, got to get my mask on real quick before the waitress comes over.
Well, I will say this waitress had on a mask and a shield and kept her distance. And so I did feel very like she was incredibly self-aware of like,
yes,
not bringing her breath over here.
Her breath?
So that was that. So, okay, wait, we have a whole bunch. I feel like I could talk to you about a myriad of things that have nothing to do with the topic. But I wonder, okay, so when we talk about like Black folks in fashion, I know that feels like a very general thing, but I just feel like I have always seen it like sequestered in like a very specific space. Like, these are the Black designers to care about right now. And I'm always like, what is that? Is it just because of the racism? Is it because of the your Eurocentricness of it, et cetera?
I think part of it is, it's a combination of all of the things. It's like who someone has deemed acceptable to run with in fashion. You know, like, not to like bring down like Virgil, but it's like, Virgil had his own thing happening before and he was really popular with like a big crowd of people. So they're like, hey, here's the designer you should care about. It should be Virgil. And like, meanwhile, there is, you know, the Tracee Reese's of the world who has been, she's been around, but she's also like a Black woman. She wasn't like, you know, I always went to her show, went to every show, sitting there ready.
Like, I almost wore a Tracee Reese dress today in honor of this interview.
Yeah. But you know, she didn't get, it's like almost like a popularity contest. I feel like some of it becomes like that, but which happens in general in fashion. Right. But when you're also Black, it's just like another added like layer. You know how they want us to compete with each other, and like there is only space for one. And the same thing happens in, you know, people who work behind the scenes, because Black in fashion is also like the makeup artist, the digitech. There's so many people who put together fashion that are Black that no one is, they're not forward facing. So you don't know who they are. They may not be the fashion director of Vanity Fair. They could be, you know, someone who's writing copy. They're still working in fashion space. So they're there, but they're just not, you know, forward facing. No one's like, hey, you need to know this person. But I feel like 2021 has brought around some of that discussion and created topics of like, hey, when you're hiring Black people to work in fashion, don't just always look at the stylist or the photographer. There are so many other people you can hire to make this image. You know, and even like the big designers, they have like a knitwear designer, then maybe the knitwear designer is Black. Just because she doesn't have her own label or he doesn't have their own label doesn't mean like they're not also working in fashion. So there's a bit of a game of it all. So it makes it feel like there's so few of us when there really is a lot of people, I think.
Yes, because it definitely does feel like, because, you know, I'm only thinking of like the outward facing and like the designers, honey, the designers, you know, and it's like, that's really been kind of like the calling card for like what is, you know, hot and what is popping. And, you know, in terms of like, just the fashion space. I feel like we've seen, you know, stories, you know, that are related to racism from houses that don't necessarily have a lot of Black voices, you know, whether it's Prada or Gucci. I mean, I saw some Dolce glasses the other day and I had to Google to see if maybe they had changed, and they have not. So I could not buy the glasses.
Could not buy the glasses. It's could not buy the glasses is amazing. I feel like I spent a lot of time Googling, like, let me find out if this is right. Is this right?
Like, and I really was hoping, I was really hoping that I would see, like, Dolce & Gabbana has a renouncing of their past statements and an awakening. And it was like, no, they're still racist.
People are racist. They're not going to, they just don't want to stop. It's so crazy. It's like, don't you just want to mind your business? Mind your business. Go about your day. But they're just threatened by, like, other people.
I guess it always surprised me, though, because the fashion space always felt like the art space to me. And so I feel like, you know, I would love to hear from you, like, where does that actually, where's the line actually drawn in that? Because because now that I know more about it, it feels less of the art space and more of commercial and more about it's a business space.
It's a business space, point blank. And which is why you'll see, like, I recently have noticed I get so many pitches from designers that I've not necessarily heard of before, and they'll send me pictures, and every model in their lookbook or that they're saying is Black. So I'm like, oh, is this person Black? And then I do my due diligence and I research, and I'm like, no, they're not. They're now like, oh, let me put all the Black models that I wasn't going to use before so I can send it out. So people, it's almost like a fashion way of blackfishing. Like, ooh, these people don't do their research. They're going to just assume I'm Black as well because I use all the Black models in my campaign, or I've used all these Black models in this lookbook. So, and it happens. People get tricked because people don't do their research. But, you know, I feel like fashion is a space. It's constantly moving, and there's shoots happening all the time. Like, you don't always have the time to research everything. I research it. So I'm like, it's a quick Google search. What's this person look like? Let me go to their about. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll just straight up ask, hey, I'm working on this story. I'd love to be more inclusive. Does the brand you're representing, does the designer happen to be a person of color? And they're like, oh, well,
I mean,
no, but it's like the same thing with sustainability. Like, is this actually sustainable? Well, we make it in the United States, so there's really low carbon emission. I'm like, that's not what I was asking. Can't be tricked because I'm an old horse. I'm old. It's business. I'm old. I'm antiquated. They're calling me auntie and mom.
Okay, so where were you before Vanity Fair?
I was working freelance for a while. And before that, I was at Allure magazine, which was like all beauty. I was there for a long time. I was at InStyle. So those were like my magazines, but like very white spaces.
And when you were doing freelance, what were you doing?
Ooh, the freelance game was like a straight hustle. Like, that's okay. What I was doing. Just
like, so it's like, it could be sales consulting. It could be,
I would consult like with a designer on like a collection. Here, let me style your runway show. Do this. Doing freelance photo shoots. Just, you know, talk to some friends who were still actually working at magazines. And like, hey, I'm doing freelance. If you need anybody, I was doing all of it because I have a family to support, and it's hard. It's a big hustle, but I hated it.
Really?
You're like chasing places. You're like, hey, I didn't get paid. Still didn't get paid for some things that I did in 2018, but you know.
It's fine. You're at Vanity Fair right now. How do you feel like the Black presence in fashion has shifted, like, since you started as an intern at 25 to now?
Oh, it is definitely taking a turn for the better, I will say. Mm-hmm. There's going to be ups and downs, but like when I was interning, even when I was an assistant, I mean, someone could have a straight conversation, be like, why do I always have to shoot the Black girl? Like, while you're in the room, like, don't care. had those conversations. I've also like had been like working at a magazine where someone said, you know, I can't remember who we had on a cover. I want to say it was like, maybe it was Alicia Keys as the cover and we're trying to figure out like a next one. They're like, oh, we just had one. And like, you know, like I feel like at that point I was like further along in my career, not afraid of being fired. Like, fuck right. it, I don't care. I'll be fired. And they were like, I was like, what do you mean by one? They were like, a musician. And I'm like, that's interesting. Cause I really don't think that's what you meant. I don't think it's what you meant. I know it's not what you meant. But we just had.
We just Because
you know, like, we know those microaggressions. We know those little, like, things that they want to say, but they are like, they halt themselves because like, oh, I see there's one in the room. Let me say it in a different way. Maybe she won't catch it. So like, it slowly has changed. There's things that I would have never spoken up about before ever because I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel space. But I feel like with 2020, that now even those that are interns and assistants at any level working in fashion have been, it's like given permission to say so. Like, we're like, you know what? Say it. What are they going to do? Are they going to fire you? Because that's just going to bring them more heat because now we're in this culture of like, hey, just want to let you all know that X and Y Z brand let me go because I spoke up about this. It just, so it's only like working to your advantage. So I tell anyone I work with, which half my team is Black in my fashion department, you don't feel right about something, say it. If you don't feel comfortable saying it, bring it to me and I will say something. But I feel lucky in a space at Vanity Fair, you know, the editor-in-chief is a woman of color. When I went there, the fashion director was a Black woman. So it felt very much like you can speak up always. But I think anywhere else I've worked before, it was like, you had to really think about it. Like, is this the one time I'm going to speak up and risk it all? So I think we're slowly like moving out of that and turning for the better.
Do you feel like fashion as an industry, like how does it operate uniquely? Because I feel like for a lot of us who aren't in fashion, it feels like this like special, like even seeing like Devil Wears Prada, you know, you're just like, oh my God, like it's so different over there. Like the way they operate, like I don't know. Like, I just feel like when I saw that you were a fashion editor, I was like, oh, so curious to hear about like what her day to day is in the fashion of it all.
My day-to-day now is super weird because of COVID, but like before it was like, I can say like I had a fun job. I mean, I still have a fun job. It's a fun job. At the end of the day, I don't have to worry about saving anyone's life. Don't have that pressure. It is just like, hey, I get to go to Europe twice a year and like be driven around in a car, in a very fancy car with a driver and like pop into this showroom and drink some champagne and look at beautiful clothes and, you know, every once in a while, like meet someone very famous. You're like, oh my God, this is exciting. Or like, I don't know. I got to have a Zoom phone call with Dr. Angela Davis. Like, why would that happen?
Well, why did that happen?
I'm texting her for a photo shoot. Like, if, you know, like at the end of the day, like that is like exciting. I mean, I think I cried and I was like, I can't believe I'm on the phone with you. I've learned about you my entire life.
My entire life.
My dad still has a crush on you, like no matter what, like you are his woman. So, you know, like things happen to you, or like at Vanity Fair, you know, we did a special issue and Ta-Nehisi edited the issue and like being on a Zoom with him and I'm like, this is amazing. This wouldn't have happened if I was like, I don't know, worked at the bank. Like it's like an, you know, like, hey, lots of friends who work in banking, but like it's such a different dynamic where your every day is kind of nuts. Like it's just kind of like out of the ordinary. You don't operate the same way. You don't have like the same systems. I mean, I have a lot of friends who work in finance. Like we went to NYU together. They were all in the business school and they're like, yo, fashion is weird. Like this business model doesn't make any sense. But I'm like, but I feel like something they don't realize is like, hey, the masses, like the people who consume fashion, you control the way our business model works. Like you guys want what's popping, what's new, what's hot all of the time. And so like, that's how we operate. And that's part of it. It's like, what's fresh, what's out there, What do you like this? It's like new.
If you're a Black designer, like, where do you feel like is like the sweet spot for Black designers right now? Is it like, is it couture? Is it streetwear? Is it like, where do you feel like there's space?
To me, there is definitely space in accessories. Mm-hmm. There's not that many. And truly, I don't feel like, it's not really secretively, but like accessories is really what provides the finances for big houses. Like, if you think about it, like, how often does someone go and buy, let me think, like, a full look that's like a dress that's like thousands of dollars, but you're more willing, no matter how much money you make, to be like, well, I'm going to get that Gucci bag because I can save for it and it's going to last me a long time. But necessarily the dress that they make,
I can wear once.
I can wear it once. I can wear it a few times. It's not, you know, necessarily the thing that's going to be like, I'm going to covet this for forever. If, you know, and that's in general the way people shop. It's like you're much more willing to go ahead and buy those Bottega shoes as opposed to like Bottega Look 3 coat that is $12,000. You know, exactly. Like, you're like, I could buy the shoe, it's $900. I could, you know, depending on, you know, maybe you're able to just like go ahead and purchase it right away, or maybe you have to save for it, but it's something that you're like, well, it's a shoe, it's going to last me forever, or a bag, it's going to last me forever. So I think there's that great space. Like, look at Telfar, like, created a bag. It's at a
now everybody has this damn bag.
I got the bag. I was like, yo, if I had to be like, if I get beat by the bot one more time to get this bag, or like set my alarm for the wrong day, or one of these kids in this house asked me to do something at the time the bag drops and I miss the bag drop, I'm going to lose my mind. I need the bag. I cannot live like this. I need the bag. I can't be like the only Black editor who doesn't have a Telfar bag. I need the bag so much. It was like consuming me. But that's how, it's the same thing for a Pierre Moss sneaker. I was like, give me the sneaker, Nate. Sneaker.
I just met Kirby the other day and I was like, you're like fine. Like, I had no idea that Kirby was like fine in person. I was like, you don't give this in your Instagram. You're not giving.
Instagram is a liar.
He's not giving you New York swag fine, which is a specific type of energy. And I was like, look at you.
I was like regular and nice and like does good work and like does work for the people outside of his fashion life. But like his Instagram is like, I got a fast car. Like, it's funny.
Exactly.
That's who he is. You're like, what is this new car? But he probably just like loves cars.
Oh, it's my
like,
God.
I noticed, like, I told someone the other day, it's like, they were asking me about, you know, styling celebrities and like how you work at that. And I was like, you know, it's like, I think regular people, we forget that like an actress or a musician, they're real people. They're just real people. So you just treat them like real people and like, fine. It's the same thing in fashion. Like, I love fashion, but I also read. You know, like, I can read.
That's dope.
I know. It's like,
I can read.
More than one thing. Or they were asking me about like, someone asked me about AOC and her being in expensive clothes and a photo shoot. And I was like, but like, I don't care if she wants to be the most fashionable person in the entire world. She can do more than one thing.
Yeah.
She can be a politician and also
give you a look. Dope dress. Yes.
Give you a look. Serve a lip. You can do it.
There's also just like a certain obsession that particularly Black folks have with brands, right? And it's like our obsession with brands is, I'm not even necessarily sure if I've really figured out what our obsession with brands is. Is it like, I think in some respects, people like to say like, well, it's because like, you know, we want what we can't have and it feels so luxurious. It feels so like distant and far away. And I'm like, okay, maybe that's it.
I think it's like a cultural, and I think it's not just Black Americans, it's all over. It is the like being told you can't have this. Like, I was doing research one day randomly because we have a Cadillac, and I was like, let's just do some research. And it was back in the day, because you know, like, Black people drive a Cadillac. That is like,
I will have a Cadillac. I'm obsessed with Cadillacs.
It's an old Black man's car. You get a Cadillac. My grandfather always drove a Cadillac. He still drives a Cadillac. He's 100 years old. He's 100. He has like a Cadillac.
He can still drive?
He still has his license, but he chooses not to because he says he stopped driving last year. Let me not get crazy. He stopped driving last year. He was just like, I've had enough. Kid, one accident.
Yeah. Yeah. You had enough.
You're 100. Please give me the keys. So, but he still got a new car last year. Got a new Cadillac. But they used to not sell Cadillacs to Black people. They didn't allow it. You went to the showroom or whatever, they were not going to let you purchase their car because they didn't want Black people driving Cadillacs. It was for rich white people. So back in the day, rich Black people would get their rich white friends to purchase the Cadillac for them so they could drive it. So it's like, ha, can't tell me what I'm not going to do.
Right.
I like this Cadillac. I want to drive it. So that's, you know, that's part of it. But it's also like us, you know, you get dressed up on a Sunday. It was like your time and being really dressed up and like showing off, like we might have been pushed down and all these things, but what we're going to always do is get dressed.
We're always going to give you a look.
You don't want us to buy these things. We don't want us to go into the Gucci store or whatever it was back in the day, Vuitton. Okay. Dapper Dan, I'm going to make it for you. How about that? Can't tell us what we can't do.
I don't do Louis. I went into 3 Louis stores and every time they looked at me like, why are you here? And I was like, and you're not a Louis girl. And that's the end of that. I saw somebody say the other day, like I was in a Gucci dress and they were like, how can someone so woke be wearing Gucci? And I was like, I understand that on a top line, but I feel like the industry as a whole is racist. And so it's literally like, I would just be wearing, what'd you say?
There's faults in so much, like in every aspect of all of it, there are faults. Whether it's like racism, sustainability, it's like you have to pick and choose what you're going to fight against. I think sometimes you have to just pick something like, or hey, guess what? I can still wear this dress and fight the fight.
I mean, I know people wanted me to burn my Montclair coat. And I was like, I am not hurting Montclair by burning this coat.
Nope.
But I am hurting myself because I spent money on this coat and it is warm. And so my happy medium was I covered up the logo with a James Baldwin patch. And it's like, I'm still wearing the coat that I bought, but I'm not advertising the brand. And that was kind of like where I came with it. Like I have some Gucci stuff that I added elements to, like I painted on them and I just kind of gave my own energy to. And I think, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. Like there's a certain, I was a rapper. There's a certain level of just egregious opulence that lives in me, you know? And Black people, that's us.
The other day I was looking at something and I was like, yo, if I buy one more thing that's printed logos, like I need to call it a day. Like what is wrong with me? Like, but I love it. But I also like, you know, I grew up in the 80s, 90s. I had a brother that was 7 years older than me. So like,
oh,
he was like swaggy, 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 swaggy. Like would show up with like 2 polo shirts on at the same time, collar popped. And then the next day he's like, no, you got to wear your gold chain over your Black turtleneck. And it's got to have like this, this, and this. Like that was everything to me, was like his style. And that like 80s come up of like the logo and the brand and like, I'm going to get a fur and I'm going to take my Wallabies down to Fulton Street and have them spray painted. Like it was a thing and I loved it and it makes me feel good. And like fashion makes me feel good. So I'm not going to apologize for that. If I want 3 things that are full logos, I'm aware. I don't care.
I mean, I think I listen, I hear you because I reconcile this. I try to reconcile this all the time. And that's why I was telling you, like, I couldn't buy the glasses, like, because fashion makes me feel good. But then I have to, like, there are boundaries that I've had to give myself that I can't cross. You know, like, people will be like, why do you still wear Gucci? And I'm like, well, at least Gucci, like, made an effort and continues to. And Dapper Dan is a part of their house and, you know, like, continues to create and, like, there was an apology issued. I mean, they had someone working there who, like, sent me a legit, like, direct apology. Like, we are sorry. But I have a question. Like, how does something like that happen? Like, with what happened with the Gucci turtleneck and, like, when Moncler puts out some wild shit, when Prada, how does that happen? Like, what is the actual order of events that gets something from design to manufacturing?
The problem is there are not enough people of color who have eyes on the item, or if there are, they're not granted the permission to express that, hey, this feels racist. This is racist to me. It will, and if it feels racist to me, it is definitely going to appear that way to someone else. And they're just, and I feel like people like to make excuses. Oh, these are European brands. I'm like, there's Google, there's history books. We all had to learn history. Like, we learned it.
They literally made up colonialism.
You actually invented colonialism. So, like, please stop. You know what it is. You have racism in your own countries, whether or not you guys all want to say, like, no, but we are all French and we are all Italian. It's not the truth. You treat people differently in your respective countries. So you know that these things are out there. You've seen the imagery. So, and I just think it just, it stops. It's like, someone didn't see it. Someone didn't see something wrong with it. Because even, like, in my own thing, I'm, like, looking at something, I'm like, oh, wait a second. That might be racist. Can't do that. Like, how is that going to appear? Like, you stop yourself to see something. Yes. Like, oh, that might come across bad. But I think as people of color, you're always in tune to noticing those things.
Yes. There was this woman who has a line. I'm trying to remember her name. This woman who had a line, Katya something. And she had a line, like, she still has a line, but, like, she, I discovered her in, like, Kierna Zabede, like, in that boutique in, is it gone?
I'm pretty sure it's gone. Kierna Zabede, yeah. The small boutiques, like.
Well, it was there when I last was in New York, which was January 2020, because I did Caroline's. So it was there.
Maybe just because, like, I haven't really gone outside because of the pandemic.
So. That could be really going.
I don't know that it's still there, but yeah, I just assumed.
I've gotten some, like, really cool pieces from there, and I had discovered this woman's store, like, right next door, and she has, like, a lot of stuff that had, like, animals on it, but then she also had, like, really dope images of brown skin and, like, darker skin women, like, on her line, and they were done in a tasteful way, so I don't want to take that away. They were done in a tasteful way, but I just became, like, obsessed with, like, this line. And she's Russian. And when I bought the jacket, the saleswoman recognized me and sent the designer or somebody in their team, like, hey, this is Amanda Seals. She just bought this. Like, you should reach out to her or whatever. Then, like, my PR reached out to them because we were just trying to think of, like, just different places and spaces for me to be in. And they wanted me to be the face of their Africa line. And I was like, well, I'm too light-skinned for that. You know, I'm not saying that there aren't light-skinned people in Africa, but you're already Russian. So, like, you doing an Africa line is already low-key sketch. And I would need to get, like, some more background about, like, what that is. Because, like, she had been doing stuff that was, like, culturally inspired. It didn't feel like appropriation, but it did feel like inspired. It didn't feel like appropriation because when I feel like I'm looking at appropriation, it feels like you're whitening something that clearly is not white. right? Like you're trying to make it fit into like the banality of no culture. So is she, and that didn't, it didn't feel that way at her other stuff. But then with this stuff, I was like, you know, I would be willing to do it, but you need to partner me with a model that is from the continent. So like you have the model representing the continent and I can be like your celebrity, you know, ambassador, whatever, but you're grounding it in the authenticity of a model who is from the continent of Africa. And again, I am too light skinned to be the representative of your brand for the continent of fucking Africa. Like I just, it's just not, it's, I can't do that. And
wax.
I can't, like, it doesn't, and
why was she asking you to just do the Africa line? Why not any of her other lines?
And so this was, I mean,
like, editorial. They're like, ooh, you know, at Vanity Fair, we don't really do like fashion trends, but when I've worked at other places, you know, you're shooting models and you're doing trends and they're like, we need to shoot a sporty story. Let's get the black model. We want to
athletic, because you know, they're muscular.
There's an animal trend happening on the runway. Let's find the black model. So, right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, I didn't even, you're right. You're totally right. And when we, it took like a pure struggle to get the designer on the phone. And when she finally got on the phone and I was like, what's your inspiration for this line? She was like, I'm from Russia. Like, we don't, you know, it feels like you are saying that there's like some type of racism, but we don't have that in Russia. You know, we are all just, you know, loving people and everybody. And I'm like, that's a crock of crap. And it didn't even need to go that way, but she was legit trying to act like, it was such white privilege. It was just like, the world is my oyster. And if I want to do a fucking Africa line, I don't need to explain to you where my inspiration is. And it's like, well, Africa is a continent. So, you know, because there's like a whole different thing from like Namibia to Mozambique. Like these are places. And she just kind of, when she got off the phone with me, her marketing person was like, you know, we just don't think this is going to work. And I was like, no shit, Sherlock. Like but it was one of those moments where I really saw in real time, just the way that the politics fucks with the actual artistry, and that like you, and it sucks, but you have to be conscious of it.
You like, have to be conscious. And as an editor, I am very conscious of it. It's like, hey, if I need to work with this brand for like X, Y, and Z reason, I'm going to be conscious of what they're doing all the time. And I also don't want to put things out there to the public and like be like, hey, you should buy this, knowing that the brand don't care at all. It's like, they don't care. They're doing it for whatever it's like. That's, I feel like, something actually moving forward that us as editors have to look at. It's like, are they doing this for clout and trying to, you know, it was like they're black squares. They're like, oh, we posted these black squares. But like, if you looked at their Instagram through the past, it's like, yeah, I don't care. Didn't care before. Definitely didn't care before. Not one bit. Not about anyone else, but like what you have deemed beautiful, which was like a white girl. Period. But now going forward, let me see what you're doing. If you're, what you're actually doing. And I feel like most of the brands who didn't need the black square, they were already doing it. Didn't care. I'll cast a black model. Don't care. Cast an Indian model. It didn't matter. It's just someone who they felt looked like their brand and their clothes, and that they had a wider scope of like, anybody can wear these clothes. But now I really pay attention. I'm looking to see when they're pitching me things like, we are partnering with X, Y, and Z artists, black artists, to make this thing. It's like, but why? What were you doing before that? Did you actually care before? Or are you trying to make amends? And I want to see it going.
So what are some brands that you feel like were already on, like, on, they were on par, like they were already about it?
I'll say, let me think. Like a brand by a white designer that was already doing the thing, Rosie Azzeline. Since she first started showing clothes, she always showed in a diverse group. I feel like actually you would like it. You would like it.
Let me tell you something. When I tell you I love fashion, like in my trajectory of my career, I'm just like, can I please become a fashionista? I just want to be famous enough to one, help people more, right? So that's first. Yeah. Two, get See's candies to make me dairy-free peanut brittle. And three, to give you fashion, like in a real way. Like these are like actual goals. Like I did a spread for Essence and I mean, that's a conversation we'll have offline, but I got to give you a Valentino dress on a boat with a Grenada flag, you know, in the wind.
Yes.
I got to give you a Valentino dress. Yeah, jump out with. Yes, yes. I got to run through like a fucking palm tree lined. Because
fashion is fun.
Yes. And for me, it really is art. And that's why I like the commerce part of it. So I just dropped a line, Illustrious League. And like, you know, we're starting very, 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 very small. And it, right now, like the first drop is really this loungewear, but it's my design. And it's like, it has my artwork. And, you know, for me, it's like, let's just make some stuff that feels good and looks good. And then it's like, okay, yeah, bitch, but.
But can you sell it?
And like.
That's where it differs from art, is like artists can make things and a lot of times I feel like art, like a painter or a sculptor, they don't care if it ever sells. But in the end of the day, when you're making clothes,
it has to sell.
And there are, you have to be able to make money from it.
We're fortunate. Like, I mean, we sold out of our first drop. And like, to your point about accessories, yeah. Like we had like patches and pins in that first drop and hats and Scullies and like out the door.
Those
like,
sold first. They're
bought. Yes. Yes. And our first drop, we were not able to have 2X because one, like we couldn't source it in the same color as, I mean, this is the growing pains, right? Like getting people on board, yes, who have the experience and the connections and the relationships to be able to get you, you know, what you need. But like, we just didn't have the access to it. And so I had some folks that were upset because they were like, you know, the sizing isn't inclusive. But then I had a lot of people who were like, we understand, because I did give an explanation about what happened, that people were like, we understand. That's why I bought a patch, a pin, a hat, because I know that you're going to get 2X next and we will be able to, yeah, take part. And just a side note, we are restocking and we do have 2X in the restock. Okay, guys. So
I mean, size inclusivity is a whole other thing that I necessarily do not always understand, but talking to some designers, it is actually a lot more complicated because the way the system is set up.
Yes. Which part do you not understand? Like the difficulty in it?
The difficulty. Someone explained a little bit of it to me the other day and I was just like, oh, I can't just make
it. No.
And they were like, it doesn't work that way. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't design it. I have no idea. That's the same thing where like, I'll talk to a designer and be like, you should make this in kid size. And they're like, we cannot. Number one, I don't even have the budget to do that.
So that's really the biggest thing. It's like, unfortunately, bigger clothes cost more money. Like, yeah, that's just the basics of it because there's more fabric being used and there's more labor being used to make them. So they charge you more, but then I don't think it's ethical for me to charge my customer more,
right,
for a bigger garment that ultimately is still the same style as everything else, right? So
yeah,
like you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place there, and you're trying to figure out like, how do we get like margins and costs? See, these are the words I don't want to have to like, I'm just like, can I just like design it? And so
you just design it.
That's why like I had a moment where I was like, maybe I need to take a certificate class at FIT and like really get my like fashion merchandising up. And then I was like, or you could pay someone who's already done that.
Or that.
And have them teach you.
But if you want to learn for yourself.
Well, I do want to learn for myself, but I think there's also just like, managing time. And, you know, for what it's worth, I think a lot of Black folks that find themselves in the fashion space, particularly like if you're already coming from another space into this fashion space, it becomes like kind of this like hobby. And that is a thing that I don't want. Like, I don't want it to feel like a hobby. So that's why I wanted to like take a class. Yeah. But I'm also like, you will fail the class. You don't have time.
When are you going to do it? At one point, I also wanted to be a doula because I just feel like birth is something that's really important, and especially with like Black women and yes. all of that that goes into it. And I happen to have like great-ish experiences. So I'm like, I just want to pass this on. I don't, but I'm like, when am I taking this class? Like, I don't have time for this. So I could just focus in on my friends who are having babies and talk to them and see how they're doing and, you know, not do the whole thing. Maybe I do it when I don't work in fashion anymore, but like right now I don't have time for that. Oh, well, I have to do something. But
so
yeah,
you said something earlier though, that struck me when you were just like, you know, as editors, we need to be like super conscious, et cetera, et cetera. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand like how important the role of the editor is within the fashion space in terms of making sure that there is visibility. And so I would love to hear more about like that role and the role you play.
It's, there needs to be a balance. I feel like it's the industry is definitely saturated. Like, with brands that are like white houses. I'll just say that they're the Dior's, the Chanel's, these are white brands based yeah. off of his.
I mean, like when Kanye was just like, how, Sway? How? You don't have the answers. He was basically yeah. just like, we don't know how to do the Black version of this.
We just have to, and it's even with Virgil being at Vuitton, it is still a white house. In the end of the day. So,
okay, so wait, you're pronouncing it properly and everybody else is not. Say it one more time.
Which one?
Louis. Virgil?
Louis Vuitton.
Vuitton. Okay, so you know we're all like Louis Vuitton.
Louis Vuitton. Let me speak to Louis. I got the new Louis's.
I just got my stimulus check. Put Louis on the line. Okay.
Louis on the line. But I think as an editor, what is great for us is that there is the Virgil there. At, I believe it's Nina Ricci, one of the designers is Black. Like, you know, Balmain has a Black designer. So being able to say, like,
because he's giving you, Olivier is giving you he was fabulous. Like,
Black, and I am here.
Yeah.
I know.
Bonjour, 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 bonjour. Bonjour. Bisous, 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 bisous.
Love it. Snatch, doing the thing, loving fashion. It's in the DNA.
It really is. It's there.
But like showcasing them, but also looking to find the smaller brand. And it's like, you know, everyone's like around Thanksgiving, there's like small business Saturday, but look for the small business in the Black designers as well. Searching them out, doing the research. I mean, Zarina did a great job. She was like, here, I put it on a website. At first I did an Instagram. Now here's a website for you. Black owned everything. Mm-hmm. Send it in and finding it and curating it and looking and seeing where you can fit it in so that there's almost like a, you have to balance it out. Like I have to cover the big houses. That's part of my job. But I can also put in there like, oh, hey, there's a Black company that's making eyewear. Did you know? Like that it exists. Like we exist in so many spaces. So just finding them and putting the balance. And it's just, if you just have to work like that. It's like Aurora asking for the 15% pledge. She's just like, hey, there's lots of Black beauty brands. Put them on the Sephora shelf. Let's go. There's lots of this. Like, you just finding
that. Wait, you did. That was shorthand. We don't know who Aurora is, and we don't know what the 15% pledge is.
Aurora is a designer. She has a brand called Brother Vellies. She's, you know, that's where she started. She makes shoes, but she started during 2020 was like, hey, you know what? I noticed that there are no Black brand. Like, I don't know if she started with beauty brands or also if it stemmed from fashion too, is asking the big department stores like the Bloomingdale's, the Targets, the big boxes to be like, well, you have space. You need to dedicate 15% of your space to Black owned businesses. Mm. So like, let's start this come up. So I know she has like, Sephora has signed on. We're like, yeah, we can dedicate 15% of our floor space to Black owned businesses. No problem. Here we go. So she has this, been having this push throughout 2020 into 21 to get, I feel like it's really more about like the really big boxes that can make a big impact in the Black community. If you get, you know, like I'm seeing it for like, there's like small brands and I'm like, oh my God, I am now going to be selling at Sephora. This is going to be life changing for them. This is building generational wealth for them. Yes. That they can disperse in their community. So I think that's something that is really important. And it's the same thing as, even though like it's a page in a magazine, if I have a page of 12 products, I'm going to try to make sure at least one of them is from a designer of color, a Black designer, an Asian designer. I'm going to try my best to be like, we need to put this here. And if I can't put it in the book, I'm going to do it online. I'm going to do it somewhere.
You, but it's you making a choice to mm-hmm. make that a priority that makes the difference.
Yeah. And it's the same thing I was doing before 2020 as a Black editor, being like, all right, it's Fashion Week. I have to go to all of these shows. I'm going to make sure I also go to shows by designers of color as well. I'm not going to just sit there and go to like Marc Jacobs or like if I'm Paris Balenciaga. I want to go and seek out and go to the Black designers, because if you're not, we're not showing up for them. No one knows that they, you know, in the editorial world, it's like, oh, I didn't know they existed. Or, you know, like it makes it even harder. And they're so small. They don't have the money for advertising. They don't have like the money for maybe a really big powerhouse PR firm to get their name out there. Like these are things that, and that truly helps brands. You get a big PR house. They're pushing your name out there. They're email blasting. They're like, hey, I need you. By the way, while you're looking at my Paco Rabanne, I also need you to look at this line by this Black designer. Or, you know, it works.
And those so. PR houses are they are they're unique in that, like, they, I feel like they really pick and choose who they want to rep. And in a way that it's like not the same with actors. I feel like with PR, they're just like, yeah, yeah, pay us a check, it's fine. But I feel like PR for fashion, it's like a big deal to be able to be repped by certain firms, because you know that they're going to be like kind of ushering you in with these other big names. And
really,
I mean, I wonder how far away do you feel like we are from a major Black fashion house?
You know what? I feel like in America, I think we have some work to do, because there isn't really like someone so big at the forefront. It's smaller and they're not as expensive. Like there is Kirby, which his line is expensive, but he also, you know, Pierre Moss, that's Kirby's line. But, you know, in London, there's Kenneth Ives. He is like a, you know, one of the designers on the come up. I think he definitely has the potential to become a really big house. There's Wales Bonner. She has the potential. Grace Wales Bonner. She has the potential to become really big and, you know, make this big thing. But I think here in the US, we need to like push forward these brands. And I don't know if it's like going into FIT or Parsons or RISD and finding who they are and really cultivating them as they do at like Central St. Martin's in London, fashion school, like really pushing them forward. And I think that's something like maybe it's Black and Fashion Council is working on and the CFDA, but we have to like put them to the forefront so we can have the Black Marc Jacobs, the Black Michael Kors, you know, like maybe Telfar can get there since, you know, they're able to, they have to be securing bank with the bag.
Everybody has this fucking bag, to the point where I was like, should I have this bag? Everyone has this bag. I'll take a gander. I mean, I was just like, everyone has this bag. Why don't I?
And it's vegan. Better for the planet. How about that?
Better for the planet.
Well, maybe. I'm still on the fence about things vegan leather, but. Potentially better for the planet.
Well, you are absolutely better for the fashion industry. And, you know, it just always feels good to know that there's somebody in these spaces who is not trying to be polite And that, like, that's the space I inhabit within, like, Hollywood. Like, I feel like you could love me or hate me or whatever, but you should know that, like, I'm always in any room I'm going to be in going to fight for justice and for visibility and amplification of people of color and women. And, like, that is always the agenda. Like, it's never me first. Like, it's always like, okay, but wait, what are y'all doing?
Because at the end of the day, I could not be working in fashion. You could not be an actress, but you're still going to be Black.
Pretty much.
So that's that. So I actually had a phone call the other day and I was like, I now have to turn my fashion director mind off of this and turn to a Black woman and be like, hey, 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 this isn't right. This has nothing to do. It had nothing to do with fashion. I'm like, this isn't right. As a Black woman, I'm speaking up for other Black women. I don't like this. That's how I operate.
You're warming my heart. It's like, that's how I operate. And what you're saying is really important, because I think when we talk about being Black in fashion or being Black in Hollywood or being Black anywhere, there is like a value system that you're operating from in those spaces that really ultimately determines like how change happens in those spaces. The script. Now, for this episode's The Script, I would love if you could share with us any Black designers that you feel like we do need to get on our radar that we may not be hip to.
Okay. So I will say Mateo. He's a jewelry designer. It's beautiful. It's fine jewelry. So what? Fine jewelry. If you're going to invest in something, look at Mateo. It's gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. And he has some things that are slightly lower in price, but if you're going to buy a diamond stud, don't go to Zales, go to Mateo.
That's the motto.
Stimulate a Black man. I do love, oh my gosh, just slipped my mind. It's Faye Noel. Beautiful, like loungy, pretty. You're going to buy some pajamas, something to lounge around in. Check her out. It's cute.
She's also from Grenada.
I didn't know that. You see, there's another one. I'm going to tell you like the ones that you're not going to see on the Vogue.com. You're not going to see it. Well, I mean, you might see Mateo because in other stories, but also I really love, I have to look at the name. She's a Haitian designer. And I think it's like, she makes these really pretty, like bohemian dresses. It starts with an F, Fan Mom.
Oh, I don't
Fan Mom.
Yes. How do you spell it?
Fan Mom. Beautiful.
Fan Mom.
Dresses. She's like doing hand embroidery. It's very like, you're on vacation, you're in Greece, you're going to an island. Check her out. It's beautiful. Love it.
Fan Mom. And
it's really pretty. I don't know her name though, but it's just like, it's just pretty clothes.
Right.
You know, there's that whole like, I don't know what this movement is of like, just as if you're always walking through, like there's like a fashion moment. It's like you're always walking through like lilies in a field and lavender fields and like, the wind is blowing through your hair and you don't wear shoes.
Well, you're just that outside. Like, it's really just like, look, remember this?
At all times.
Outside. All times. Look at that.
I remember outside. It was so cute. So I think like Bear Grey. And there's a shoe designer. I believe it's Chelsea Paris, but she's a Black woman.
Look at that.
Chelsea Paris. I'm pretty sure she's a Black woman. So. There you go.
I love it. So there you go, guys. That's your script for this episode where you can check out all these fabulous designers. I must say, Nicole, you are just such a delight. I mean, really, you are a delight. And when we can go outside again and I come to New York, we must have a meal outside.
I would much prefer to come to LA and have a meal outside.
Well, we're here. We are here. I mean, I feel like I I haven't gone this long without going to New York. Like I just, it's weird now. Cause now I haven't been to New York since it's been over a year. And that's like odd.
That's odd for me not to be in LA. Like all of our Vanity Fair shoots are in LA. I haven't gone to one. I'm just looking at them over Zoom. I'm like, that looks good. Wish I could be there.
I was very fortunate to be a part of a dope shoot for Vanity Fair. They did like a whole feature on like women who use their platforms. Like, I think like women who use like their like media, like their art platforms for activism. And they had like interviews. And so like Angela Rye interviewed me and we did a shoot and that was like top of 2019. But like, some of the best pictures I've literally ever taken in my fucking life, like at this shoot. I mean, and I remember just being there like, you know, I'm in Vanity Fair now. Like, this is amazing. Like, it just felt very like a milestone had been reached. Cause I'm a very big fan of the publication.
Everyone is very fair. I feel very like, I feel like I found like a great home for me. I really truly like it. I think it's because like I think part of it is for working with for an editor-in-chief of color. She's a woman of color. She thinks about things in a way broader perspective than any of the other editor-in-chiefs I've worked with. So
fabulous.
Because she knows.
She knows.
The last dose.
Well, shout out to you and thank you for sharing all of your wisdom and knowledge around the fashion and the blacks in fashion. And we'll be watching Black and Fashion and we'll be watching. And, you know, I just, again, I really appreciate the work that you guys are doing in broadening this space. I think a lot of us just remember, you know, the mania of Kanye really being like, there's no room for us. And, you know, he's many things, but he wasn't wrong in that frustration that there really hasn't been a carved out space.
It's going to take time. We got to keep carving. We got to keep fighting. We cannot give up. We cannot be like, there's no space for us here. You just keep pushing. Make room for yourself as best you can. And if you get into the room, you make room for more. Like that's just how I operate. Just keep making room.
And everybody knows that style has been a huge part of the Black revolutionary story. And, you know, there's no coincidence that when you see pictures of folks crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, they are together, honey. Okay. Like there's a kitten heel, there's a pin curl, there's a coat. Okay. Like these are slacks. These are pressed slacks. Like we look at the Panthers. They didn't just throw on a mechanic suit for their uniform. They were like, no, no, we're giving you a beret. We're giving you a leather. We're giving you like, we're giving you. Yes. They thought about it. And to your point, as you said, at the beginning of this podcast, like we have always shown that no matter how much you try to degrade us, no matter how much you try to put us down, no matter how much you try to create this false narrative that we are like monkeys from the dirt, we are giving you together. We're giving you a look and we're giving you fashion. And that's not just a part of like ego or a part of opulence. It's a part of identity and showing like we will not be put down. Like we are always going to give you freshness and flyness.
Always.
That was delightful. Oh, I love when I do a podcast with somebody. I feel like I made a new friend, right? That was so great. Thank you, Nicole. You see, guys, we are learning things. I did not even know that fashion editors were doing all of that and had all that power and influence. And I just, as I told her, I just love hearing that she's using that with a consciousness and, you know, an actual like social and political base, because you can't escape it. As she said, which I thought was so poignant, she's like, you know, you could be in Hollywood and I can be a fashion, or I could not be in you could not be in Hollywood and I could not be in fashion, but we still be Black. And it's like, that is a fact. That is a fact. So I love the designers that she suggested. So make sure to check out the script and some of those designers. And also, I'm a big fan of Stella Jean. We talked about Pierre Moss, spelled P-Y-E-R Moss. And if you haven't taken a look at Illustrious League, this is a good time. This is a good time. But shout out to Nicole and shout out to her editor-in-chief who I need to find out the name of, but who she said has really helped to just create a dope space within Vanity Fair. I don't know about y'all. I've been reading Vanity Fair for a long time. My mom had a subscription. I used to love the Troust, you know, survey, the interview at the end of every... Troust? A famous French guy's interview at the end of every issue. And, you know, there's also, of course, just the history of Annie Leibovitz and her amazing shoots that she would do for Vanity Fair. And so, you know, one of my goals is to eventually be on the cover of a Vanity Fair. You know, that's definitely top line for me. But thank you to Nicole and thank you to you all for joining us and listening in. And I think it's really good that you guys are getting the opportunity to check out these different women and just in general, just different folks who have so much to say and who are in these spaces that really don't get like amplified like that, but are important and effective in creating change in even the smallest scale. So I'm trying my best, but I hope you're as excited as I am because these have been large doses of realness.
Starburns Audio, a podcast, a podcast network.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.